Good evening and good morning. Welcome back to Coast AM. For the last 2 hours of tonight's show, we'll be joining us with Dr. Michael Sala, a pioneer in the development of exopolitics. He's going to discuss the significance of the Pope's endorsement of ET life as part of universal evolution. We're also going to talk about the strange UFO sightings near the International Space Station that have happened during the month of October. That'll be coming up a little bit later on in the show. We also want to hear from you this hour. If you have questions for our guest and would like to talk to Rob McGregor or share your own ghostly encounters, this is your chance to be a part of the show. We're going to talk about some of the haunted locations, some of the most cited haunted celebrity sightings, and some of the celebrities who've actually seen ghosts themselves. And more intriguing, we're going to talk about two ghost stories where spirits actually came back to try to help solve their own crimes. That's what we're going to deal with next on Coast to Coast AM. Rob McGregor, our guest this hour on Coast to Coast AM. His book, Bump in the Night, Ghosts, Spirits, and Alien Encounters. All right, Rob, talk to me about this. Ghost stories where the spirits actually came back trying to solve their own crimes. How is this even possible?
Well, there's a couple of good cases. First one is a double murder that took place in England in 1993. So it starts with Stephen Young. He's an insurance broker, and he's deeply in debt in the winter of 93. And he knew about these newlyweds, Harry and Nicola Fuller. He knew they had a lot of cash in their house. And he went to their cottage in Wadhurst, East Sussex, on a cold day in February, and later said he found the couple dead. But the authorities discovered evidence linking Young to the murders, and he was charged with double murder. So this is where it gets interesting. On the night of the first day of the trial, the jurors, who were sequestered, several jurors decided to undertake their own investigation. So after having drinks together, they created a makeshift Ouija board and attempted to see if they could contact one of the victims. And to their surprise, Harry Fuller came through, and he joined the party and told them that Young was indeed the murderer. And one of the jurors later said, I was crying by this time. The other ladies were very upset as well. So the next morning, they reported their findings to other jurors, and then the judge found out about the Ouija board session, and he told the jurors it was not their place to investigate, no matter what the source, and he ordered a mistrial. But later that year, Young was retried, and another jury came to the same conclusion as the message received through the Ouija board. Young was found guilty, and this time solely by the evidence from living witnesses. So that was
a good story. it makes you wonder if somebody on that jury might have had their own version of it and pushing that little planchette along to try to help their version of the case, huh?
That could be. You never know. But, that was a kind of a funny one. The other one, the Greenbrier ghost, is a little more intriguing in that it's a bit more substantial. In that this case took place in 1897. Mary Jane Heaster had a daughter named Zona Heaster Shue. And she was died suddenly, and the mother, Mary Sue, was very suspicious about what happened to her daughter, because she didn't like the daughter's husband. What happened is Zona had a child out of wedlock, and this was at a time where that was a very bad thing to happen to a young woman. So she just married this guy so she would have a husband. But he was not a very reputable character. It turned out later on that he had two previous wives that had both died under mysterious circumstances.
Mm.
He seemed to have some kind of connection or influence over the coroner, because the coroner never really looked closely at the body. When he reported finding her dead, before the coroner arrived there, he changed her clothes into her burial clothes with a very high neck collar, and he just hovered over the body and really would started weeping and wouldn't let the coroner take a close look. But the coroner did see some kind of discoloring in the neck, but he, for some reason, he never pursued any autopsy at all, and he listed her death as complications of childbirth. Well, Mary Sue knew that her daughter wasn't pregnant, so she was very suspicious about that right from the beginning.
Well, that would be a complication, wouldn't it?
And so she was very upset by this, and at the funeral, the husband hovered. There was an open casket, and there was a scarf that was wrapped around her neck, and there was a pillow on one side of her head, and like a folded bed sheet on the other side, like it was holding her head still, so it wouldn't move. And when they picked up when they ended up picking up the casket, people noticed that that her head moved in an unusual way. And the first thing that happened was that Mary Jane was given this bed sheet that was next to the head, and it seemed to be perfectly fine. But she wanted to keep it in memory of her daughter, and so she washed it. But when she washed it, the water turned pink, like from blood. But the water seemed to be had been very clear, and then it turned pink, and then she pulled out the sheet, and now it was completely pink. So that was a hint to her that that was either something of a supernatural phenomena, or possibly there was some blood that was had come onto the onto that sheet. Either way, she became very suspicious, and but she didn't know what to do. And then her daughter, Zona, started appearing to her, appeared to her three times on successive nights, and supposedly told her that her husband had broken her neck. And so Mary Jane then took the ghost message to the local prosecutor. So he had his doubts about her story, but it was enough to confirm his own suspicions about this guy. So he had the body exhumed, and they found that indeed her neck was broken. So the prosecutor attempted to bring the evidence of the ghost to the trial of Edward Chu, but the judge refused to allow it. However, the judge said, we can't bring in any evidence from a ghost. However, the defense called Mary Jane to testify to try to show that she was unbalanced, and the defense attorney made the mistake of asking about the ghost, and so the whole story got out, and the jury heard the whole story about what Zona had told her mother in these appearances, and lo and behold, the jury found him guilty. And the prosecutor was thinking that he wasn't certain that he was going to be able to get a guilty verdict on this case, because there was really no direct link to him breaking her neck except for the ghost. And so the jury apparently believed the mother and found him guilty. So that's an interesting one.
No doubt. It's very similar to a story called The Red Barn Ghost. And it makes you wonder, as you've got these skeptical mothers that are involved in these stories who had their own beliefs, did they use the tale of, oh, the ghost came forward to give me this information, since the law didn't really seem to want to take their initial response of, I think something hinky went on here? You know, it makes you wonder if they just use the ghost story. Although what's intriguing for listeners too, in Greenbrier, there is a sign there that says, interred in nearby cemetery is Zona Heaster Shue. Her death in 1897 was presumed natural until her spirit appeared to her mother to describe how she was killed by her husband, Edward. Autopsy on the exhumed body verified the apparition's account. Edward, found guilty of murder, was sentenced to the state prison, only known case in which testimony from a ghost helped convict a murderer. And they still have that sign up today.
Yeah, that's interesting. That sign is in Greenbrier, West Virginia, outside that little town.
We're going to take some calls in a few minutes. If you have questions for our guest, or if you want to share any of your own strange ghostly encounters, but let's talk real quickly. Everybody loves celebrity stories, and I know there's been the Celebrity Ghost Stories TV show that's been on there. Who is probably one of the most cited ghosts, celebrity ghosts, that you've been able to find out in your research?
Most cited celebrity ghost. We mentioned John Lennon already. Another one that has been around some is Marilyn Monroe. You know, she died of an overdose of sleeping pills in 1962, and her ghost has not only materialized in the Brentwood house where she died, she's been seen wandering the premises, but there's also a full-length mirror that was located in the, removed from her house, and is located in the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel, where Marilyn stayed at the height of her career. And so a number of people have looked into this mirror and have said they've glimpsed Marilyn in the mirror. So she's been spotted there, and also at her burial site, supposedly, she's been seen. So she seems to get around.
Wow, wandering about. Now, you know, as somebody that's intrigued by aliens and stories, what do you make of the conspiracy that maybe the reason that Marilyn was really murdered was because she was going to go forward with information that she knew about aliens from JFK? Nothing to do with the stories of infidelity and going forward. I mean, there's been all these different conspiracies, but the alien angle has really intrigued me on that.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that story. That's interesting one. I mean, that the Jackie Gleason story, of course, is a good one with the alien connection with Nixon. That's been around for a while, but I didn't know about the one with Marilyn and JFK.
Yeah, very strange that was possible part of why she was off, and it had nothing to do with the reports of their affairs. All right, let's talk. Elvis has certainly probably been seen alive and dead by more than anybody else, I would guess.
Yeah, that's true.
Is he seen just in Graceland, or is he also seen in different locations?
Well, you know, he's seen in different locations, but you always have to wonder about how valid those sightings are. And there's also, you know, a lot of fake Elvises out there.
Right.
but Graceland is the primary spot where he's been, his ghost has been sighted. You know, another aspect is ghost stories that are told by celebrities. Mm-hmm. One of the most interesting one is by Telly Savalas, the Kojak star. One day he ran out of gas while he was driving and was about to start walking when someone with a high-pitched voice asked if he wanted a ride. So he turned and saw a guy in a black Cadillac, and he thanked him, climbed into the passenger seat, and they drove off. He got a ride to where he was going, and Savalas didn't have any money with him, but the man loaned him a dollar. And Savalas insisted that he would pay him back, and got him to write his name and address on a scrap of paper. So the next day, Savalas, I guess he needed a dollar to make a telephone call to get a ride. And so the next day, Savalas calls the man, and a woman answers and says, Harry, her husband, has been dead for 3 years. And so Savalas later met her and recalled that when I showed her the paper where he'd written his name, she was really deeply affected by it and told him that without a doubt that was her husband's handwriting. So that's an eerie one.
Yeah, chilling when you've got that kind of stuff going on. There are so many strange celebrity sightings of the paranormal. What other stories do you have to share for us before we go to our break?
Well, there's Keanu Reeves. This is, you kind of wonder about some of these stories if it's just created by their publicity people. But this is one that was actually, for me, was verified very recently. So this is one that was on the internet about Keanu Reeves, and he says when he was five, he and his sister encountered a ghost in the house where they were living, and the ghost wore a white double-breasted suit, but that was all. The ghost had no legs and no head, so it was just the suit. And so that was just a short and kind of creepy story, but a strange one. And then just last week, Keanu Reeves was on the Jimmy Kimmel talk show on ABC, and Kimmel asked him, have you ever seen a ghost? You know, I guess Halloween was coming up. And he says, yeah. And his story was slightly different. He says, I think I was 6 or 7 at the time. And instead of saying he was with his sister, as the story I had come across said, he said he was with his nanny. And they both saw this ghost that didn't have a head and had this suit coat on and didn't have any legs, just gliding through. So that was kind of interesting to come across a recent verification of that story.
And now you've got more and more of these strange encounters with actresses like Lucy Liu and musicians like Kesha, who claims that they've had actual sexual connections with some of the spirit world. Was there any of the stories that just really blew you away when you heard these claims of the paranormal with them?
Well, the kind of funny story is Lucille Ball is apparently a ghost, and she's more like a poltergeist ghost. The people who live in her house, which is at 100 North Roxbury Drive in Beverly Hills, say that they've had repeated strange situations of furniture being moved around, windows breaking, they hear voices and things disappearing in the house. And so as Ricky Ricardo used to say, Lucy, you got some splaining to do.
Very cool. Rob McGregor's new book is out and available, and you can get it through Amazon.com. Bump in the Night, Ghosts, Spirits, and Alien Encounters is the name of the book. You can find more information if you go to the Coast to Coast AM website and look at tonight's guest. You'll find links to him, his books, and more information right on the site. So go check that out. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll start taking your phone calls. If you have stories that you'd like to share and questions for our guest, Rob McGregor, this is your chance to shine. So pick up the phone, give us a call, and be a part of the show. We've got more Coast to Coast AM coming your way right after this. Things that bump in the night, ghosts, spirits, and alien encounters with Rob McGregor. We spent the last hour and a half with our guest. We're going to be taking your phone calls in the next segment. So give us a call, be a part of the show with us. When we come back, we've got a full lineup of callers to share their stories and questions for our guest, Rob McGregor. That takes place next, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast AM. My guest for the evening, Rob McGregor. Rob, you ready for some phone calls?
I am.
All right, let's go east of the Rockies. Teresa in Maine, welcome to the show. What did you want to share with us?
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, you know how you have psychics and mediums, and when they sense energy, you know, they'll go into a building or a house or a haunting or whatever, they sense you know, one or two energies, and they sense them. They seem to be from a recent time. Why aren't they being barraged by a ton of energy? Like, why are there not any, you know, pilgrims that are coming back? Or why are there not any, you know, people from 200 years ago as opposed to 30 years ago? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think the situation is just, why don't me, if a person is a medium and can pick up spirit voices, why don't they hear it all the time in their surroundings? And the reason is they have to focus. They have to maintain a life, and so they can't be always turned on. And when they go into a building like that, again, they can't be under a barrage of hundreds or dozens of different entities, or maybe it's just because they could be focused on a recent one, but I think there are examples when come through from in cases that come from earlier times as well. You know, I don't think it's always just recent, I think that's the reason. The main reason is that they have to be focused. They can't take in everything in the environment.
It is intriguing, Teresa. You bring up kind of an interesting point that a lot of ghosts that are seen they seem to be between the 1800s to the early 1900s. It's almost like that timeline is bumping up against our timeline right now in quantum string theory, if you will. Maybe that's why these hauntings are so prevalent, and maybe as time progresses, the timelines will change and alter. And, you know, 2001 to 2015 were bumped up against 1880 to 1920. And as time undulates and changes, we may start seeing the ghosts of the 50s or going back to the ghosts of the 1500s. It may just, depend on where we are in time and space and how we're meshed up against that certain void in the time hiccup stream. Thanks for calling in, Teresa. Let's go west of the Rockies. We've got Bill in Tempe, Arizona. Welcome to the show.
Hello. I had a question for Rob about his title of his book.
Yeah.
It was the full title was Bump in the Night?
Yes. Ghosts, Spirits, and Alien Encounters.
That's my name.
The night, it's Bump in the Night, Ghosts, Spirits, and Alien Encounters.
Oh, I was wondering if you were aware of the origin of part of the title as part of your title, The Night the Ghost Got In by James Thurber.
Are you familiar with the bump in the night, where that came from? I think is what he's asking you, Rob.
Yeah, I'm having trouble hearing him, but I'm not familiar with the source of that. It's probably a literary reference, though.
Bill, are you still there with us?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you. Where did the term "bump in the night" come from?
Well, the title James Thurber was a humorist writer, a newspaper columnist in Columbus, Ohio, who later went to New York to one of the big newspapers. But he wrote, among other things, you probably be familiar with one of his things that he wrote was The Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Uh-huh, yes.
Well, Herbert wrote a short story years ago. It was called The Night the Ghost Got In. And he used that exact title, which has become part of our language now, things that would go bump in the night in his short story. I just thought he might be curious about that.
Great, Bill. Yeah. Thank you very much for that little bit of history. We appreciate that. Let's go to the first-time caller line, Jesse in Knoxville, Tennessee. You're on the air.
Hey, yeah. So I was curious if you'd ever heard of the work of Graham Hancock.
Oh yeah, sure. I'm familiar with.
His idea that that fairies and alien abductions might be this one and the same, and that things such as hallucinogenics are able to, switch a receiver in our brains in which we then are able to perceive this other realm in which you know, aliens can interact with us, or as it were, that fairies in throughout history have been able to do the same. Can you comment on anything about whether those ideas are something that you feel are true?
Yeah, I think that's a possibility through hallucinogenics, that there is a it could be some connection through aliens. I know that this is something that's been written about by Terence McKenna as well in a couple of his books. And but the idea that the connection of aliens and fairies, that there's some interconnection, I think that's interesting, because in possibly in other times before we're the present era, where we think of airplanes and rockets and UFO spaceships, that fairies were something that were seen as the mysterious beings visiting us, and also ghost ships. The ghost ship Caliuche in Chile is a very similar story to aliens and Men in Black, because this particular ghost ship is very interesting, because it has a crew of men dressed in black, and they come ashore and have confrontations with islanders in island of Chiloé in southern Chile. And this has been a documented story that many people have been not only seen this ship, but there's people who have been abducted and come back and told the story. But that island is remote, and so it's and these stories are from the early part of the 20th century, most of them, and so it's a ghost ship rather than a UFO.
All right, thank you, Jesse. Let's go to Wildcard Line 1, Frederick. Frederick from Michigan, you're on the air.
Hey there, guys. First of all, since I've been on hold, I reflected on what Malachi Martin, Steve Quayle, David Jacobs, and others have said about these ghostly apparitions being essentially satanic, demonic incarnations of one variety or another. And Malachi Martin was a Roman Catholic Jesuit priest, who authored the books Windswept House, Hostage to the Devil. So I wanted Greg's take on that. And also, he mentioned 50 minutes from the previous hour, this underwater top secret, the Area 51 base. Believe it or not, in the 90s, there was a British paranormal investigator who had a series, Area 51. And in that series, I think a three-part series, there was a promo for that very thing. That I can't recall the name that was given for it, but it was either an IMAX theater, I forgot, but it blew me away. And when Greg brought this up tonight, I'm thinking, as John Lear says, adamantly insists, there's been a top-secret space program, astronaut program for decades. The public one is just window dressing. I suspect the same is true about underwater bases. Now, I'll listen off here. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. And Rob McGregor, our guest this evening. Rob, did you want to address that?
Well, I've been on Andros Island. I was there with UFO hunters for a show, and we talked to some people that had worked at the base as civilians, and they have a little more ability to talk, although they're not supposed to talk either about the secret stuff. But a couple of them have talked about seeing large, very large crafts underwater that that appeared on radar, and that appeared almost like the size of an island, a mile across, and then vanished and just sunk down. The area off Andros Island is where Autech is located. It goes down 6,000 feet. And there is another case where this civilian worker was on a sub, and suddenly they found themselves 100 miles away from where they had been moments ago, and they had no idea how that shift had taken place. So there is something going on there, definitely.
I know in your book you cover about aliens in graveyards. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, that's there's been a number of sightings of aliens over cemeteries, and it's kind of a strange thing that I don't really understand why these UFOs, not aliens, but UFOs appearing low over graveyards. I don't know what their interest is there, but there have been cases, and there was one particular case where the pastor lived near the graveyard, and there's a church nearby, and they would go up on this hill and watch after somebody was buried, because there was usually, it's not like a big ship or anything, but a glowing orb that would hover right above the graveyard. Now, whether it's related to aliens or what, they never knew, but it seemed to attract this entity or this craft, whatever it was, or maybe they were getting a ride. I don't know.
Picking up a little drop off there. Wild card line two, David in San Antonio. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I'm enjoying the show. My question centers around Savannah, Georgia. I was recently out there. My son is going to the film school in Savannah, and I went on a ghost tour, and that's a very, very old city that was settled, you know, prior to the Revolutionary War. A lot of history, and then with the Civil War, Sherman came through there, didn't burn the place, fortunately. And so the historic buildings are still there, and there's an old hotel that, well, it's a hotel now, but when Sherman came through, they needed a place to treat the wounded, and there were over 2,000 wounded Union soldiers treated in that hotel, what's now a hotel, and like around 1,200 of them died in a very brief period of time. So what's happening now, and, you know, since then, is there's a lot of, you know, sightings of ghostly apparitions of Union soldiers, and, you know, and it, throughout the whole city, there's lots and lots of stories, lots and lots of apparitions, and I was curious if you've ever been out there or thought about going out there and writing a book. There's a business out there, several businesses that do ghost tours, and it's, you know, it's like a cottage industry out there.
Yeah, ghost tours are big in a lot of cities. I've been to Savannah, but I never went on a ghost tour there. Oldest city in North America is St. Augustine, Florida, and I have taken a ghost tour there. And my daughter was with us, and she was taking pictures left and right, and there were all kinds of orbs on her pictures. Now, orbs are kind of controversial, but for whatever reason, she had a lot of them.
Yeah, and if I could, a second question. My brother lived in the Caribbean on a sailboat and was at a place called Tulum, Mexico, where he met a retired Mexican naval officer. And this man told my brother that while they were out at sea off the Yucatan somewhere, they had an encounter with, it was an underwater craft that came up and then launched itself into the air and flew and, you know, shot off, you know, into the sky and disappeared. And I didn't know if you'd heard anything like that in from that area down there around the Yucatan.
I've heard stories like that, usually from the more like from the Bermuda Triangle, however, and near Andros Island, and you know, that wouldn't be the only place where they would be, you know, coming and going. There could be a number of different so-called Bermuda Triangles or interdimensional portals where they might come through, and there's possibility of underwater bases. Yeah.
Let's go to wild card line three, Janice in Redding, California. We've got about a minute and a half left. What's your question?
Well, I was wondering, my stepfather had passed away before my children were born, and my mother had my son, who at the time was about 2.5, 3 years old. She put him down for a nap in his playpen in another room. And a couple hours later, she hears him in there talking. But she just thinks he's babbling. And she goes in, and he's standing up on the side just smiling. And she goes, "What you doing?" And he goes, "Talking." And she goes, "Who was you talking to?" And he goes, "Papa." Now, there were no other grandchildren before mine. And he just stood there, and he didn't have any grandfathers in his life. And he stood there and tells her, "Papa." And then my daughter was about, 6, 7 years old, and she comes home from school one day and says, "Mom, I feel like somebody's watching me." And I immediately almost go into panic mode. And it's like, you know, where, you know, what did they look like? She goes, "I didn't see them." And I said, "Well, where did you, you know, where do you think they was watching you?" She goes, "At school." And I said, "Okay. My friend's house." "Uh-huh. In the front yard." And I'm going, "Oh," I said, and I said, "Well, do you feel like they want to hurt you?" And she goes, "No, they're just watching." And I said, "But you've never seen anyone." "No." I told her, I said, "Okay, that's just your guardian angel."
Watching over you, right. Janice, thank you so much for calling in, being a part of it. Rob, thank you so much. And Bump in the Night, Ghost Spirits and Alien Encounters is the name of the book. Go check it out. And it's been a pleasure speaking with you this evening, Rob.
Thank you, Dave. I enjoyed it.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Dr. Michael Sala. Stay tuned. Coast to Coast AM continues right after this.